Welcome to the Bloomberg Surveillance Podcast. I'm Tom Keene, along with Jonathan Farrell and Lisa Abramowitz. Daily, we bring you insight from the best in economics, finance, investment, and international relations. Find Bloomberg Surveillance on Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, Bloomberg.com, and of course, on the Bloomberg Terminal. Minutes. Steve Chivarone is taking notes, head of Multi-Asset Solutions Federated, Hermes, right now. Steve, what have you changed here? I mean, the dynamics now, the nudginess, we have this panel today, but really the economic data tomorrow. How has Federated tweaked the 60-40 allocation?
Significantly. You know, we've been sellers really since last September, and we took the opportunity with last week's rally. You know, growth had popped about 10%, yeah. And we reduced. So we're at 1% overweight equities, which is, you know, 61% equities right now, which is the lowest overweight, Tom, that we've had really since 2008, 2009. As you know, along with Steve Auth and Phil Orlando, we've been one of the most bullish shops on the street really for the last decade plus. But we're as low in our allocation right. equities as we've been. And we mirror that on the fixed income side. We are underweight almost every major category of credit. In fact, not almost, every major category of credit. And that's really only the third time in the last 15 years.
Help our radio and TV audiences that are saying, okay, underweight, translate that. Does that mean go to cash?
It does, to a certain extent. So we've been, you know, our neutral allocation to cash in that 60-40 is roughly 3%. You know, we're sitting at 8, which is, you know, darn near 3 times our normal cash weight. So almost a triple levered cash fund, if you will.
There we go. I love it.
But I think, you know, there's going to be a time to buy longer dated treasuries as the recession, which we think is more and more likely, comes into view. The problem is, I think the rally of the last couple of weeks in treasuries is still premature. I still think you're going to have upside surprises to inflation, a Fed that's hawkish, and a 10-year that ultimately moves back to that 3.5% range. So we would look to add on treasuries as we move, as we sell off more, because I think you're going to want those longer-dated treasuries when you get into kind of worse growth periods. But right now, we think cash is king.
Steve, let's take a step back and understand the framing of your bearishness and put on your Federal Reserve thuggish hat in terms of commentating. Steve, you said before you came on that you think that they're in the midst of the biggest policy error going back to the 1930s. What exactly is their policy error?
Yeah, I mean, to Tom's point, I think it's very understandable how they got there. I mean, I don't think this is malfeasance, but when you woke up in March and interest rates were zero, inflation was 8% and the, you know, Fed was still buying bonds. I don't care how you got there. That's policy error. And that has now forced them into a position right now where, you know, they're hiking aggressively and they need to into a slowing economy. And I think what they missed, and Tom, you might find this interesting. What they missed is a longer term structural change in the economy. We were in this kind of new normal sub 2% growth, sub 2% inflation, sub 2% rate environment for a decade, new normal, if you will. And just-in-time inventories are no longer just good enough. So companies are reorienting their supply chains. Chinese working age population is set to decline 20% over the next 20 years. And the U.S. population growth is set to go from 2% growth to 8% growth over that same period. And so, and at the same time, you've undermined the three pillars, at least for the short run, of globalization. The free movement of goods really kind of peaked with the trade war. The free movement of people peaked with COVID. Yeah. And the free movement of finance may have peaked with this kind of economic war with Russia. And so I think you're headed to a scenario at the other side of a recession where you have higher U.S. growth, but it's less efficient. You're going to get more inflation per unit of growth. And that's a different world.
Steve, this a lot of people would agree on, at least in the short term. But in terms of what happens next is the question. And there was a belief in the market perhaps last week that the Fed would ease off on rate hikes when they saw a dampening in some of the growth expectations and, frankly, the underlying economy. We just heard from Loretta Mester of the Cleveland Federal Reserve. She doesn't see that happening, and she still sees a Fed funds rate well over 4% when it comes to next year. Do you think the market is mispricing that? Do you think that the turmoil that will ensue from that will confirm your bearishness and the reason why you're not ready to go full throttle into longer duration yet?
Yeah, I think the market has kind of contorted itself and had complacency multiple times over the course of the last 6 months, where it's looking for peak inflation and peak Fed hawkishness. Which, you know, and I know you guys were talking about this yesterday, but if inflation goes from 8 to 7, that's not a victory lap. You really need to get that number, you know, down, even if it's not quite to 2, certainly, you know, pretty darn close to it. And so I think the Fed still has a lot of work to do in order to do that, because you've got service price inflation that's operating around 8-9% on a 3-month basis, and wages are high. For that to come down, right, unemployment needs to rise. And I think they're going to have to go for some time.
Right.
And if they do slow, Tom, I think they're slowing because it's abundantly clear that we've got a significant decline in growth, if not an outright recession.
How fast has the employment dynamic changed? Jerome Powell said we have a strong economy in his testimony 2 cups of coffee ago.
We've done a lot of work on this as part of our recession dashboard. And you can go, on average, it's a series of indicators that we look at that, I mean, there's no perfect formula to understand when a recession is coming, but there's guide frames that you can look at and try to understand. On average, you can go from the cycle low in claims to a recession within 12 months. We hit a cycle low in claims 3 months ago. So there's no historic relationship between how strong a labor market is coming in terms of how fast it can deteriorate. And so it's a fickle friend to rely solely on a strong labor force. And we may find that the excess inventory that we have this cycle was employment in certain sectors. And I think we've seen some of the tech guys already say we overhired, whether that's Amazon or Meta or some of the other folks that have said that. So I think, look, this idea that you're going to get through this by only making job openings disappear, that's a comforting thought, but I think it's ultimately going to prove to be overly optimistic.
Hey, Steve, I just want to echo something you said earlier in the interview. If people aren't familiar with your work, to hear this from you, from Steve Orth, from Phil Orlando, it's quite something. You know, forgive the snark, but it's like Marko Kalanovic at JP Morgan coming out this morning and going Max Bearish.
You used to make fun of me for my snark around that.
Steve, thank you. Steve Chevron of Federated Hermes.
I weighed into the General Mills piece there, the 9-year piece. Back then it was a 10-year piece at a 102. I'm enjoying it this morning at an 81.
Have
That's
you
called
studied
price
that too?
Down, yield up. Got it right.
Is it greatly
Kathy
female?
Jones here, so I can yell at her because she told me to get
you,
into
you hope she's
bonds
there.
She fixed income strategist at Charles Schwab. Kathy, that's the reality. Not a bunch of bond strategists talking about spreads and credit quality. People listening and watching bought a piece at par, and they're enjoying it at 81 or 82, like the General Mills 2.25 of 31. What do you do if you own that bond?
Well, you have two choices, Tom. One is you hold it to maturity, and it goes back to par, because that's what bonds do unless there's a default. Or you sell it now, take your tax loss, and replace it with a higher-yielding bond.
Kathy, when does the concern start to creep in that we're not seeing issuance really pick up and that a lot of companies can choose not to now, but maybe in 6 months and certainly in 12 months, it'll be less of an option?
Yeah, I think right now corporate balance sheets are still among the investment grade community still pretty strong, and they did load up on debt at lower yields, so they're in pretty good shape. But we'll probably see issuance pick up. There's always going to be a window open, later on in the year as we get into next year. There will have to be some refinancing that takes place. I think a lot of the issuance now is just waiting for yields to come back down.
Do you think that they will? I mean, that's the issue. If they don't come back down, they're looking at financing costs that are double what they were potentially just a couple of years ago. How much does the need for it to come down really determine the next default cycle?
Well, I think when you're talking about high yield or certainly bank loans, then you have a problem with short rates moving up, particularly in the bank loan sector, because they adjust. The duration's very short. They adjust very rapidly. And for those companies, which are basically junk companies, their cost of financing is going to jump, 40, 50%. And that is one reason right. We're not big fans of bank loans right now. I think it'll also hit the low end of the high yield market because, spreads have moved up a bit here, but they're probably going to move up some more. We think there's a high risk of recession, particularly if the Fed goes really hard and fast the way they're talking about. And that's not going to be good for the high yield market.
What is the unexpected if the Fed moves 75 beeps in July or onward?
Well, I think it does translate into the FX market. Obviously, if the Fed goes 75, that's built into the market. And I think a fair amount of tightening is built into the market. If Loretta Mester gets her 4% next year, then I think that we're seeing an inverted yield curve, all else being equal. It'd be very difficult with the economic indicators rolling over that to see yields move up from there. I think you'd see an inverted curve. And that translates when we look at, say, the Japanese bond market and where the yen is and what's happening in Europe, that's going to translate into a pretty stiff global tightening cycle. And that's when things break.
Kathy, thank you. You're one of the best. I love hearing from you. Kathy Jones there.
There's the Charles Schwab.
Thank you.
Nobody ever says make it complicated. That is why Nationwide makes simplicity a priority by providing financial professionals with straightforward, client-ready resources. From clear strategies to help clients meet retirement savings and income needs, to ways to cover rising healthcare costs and more, Nationwide simplifies planning so more time can be spent helping clients. Nationwide is on your side. Nationwide Investment Services Corporation, member FINRA, Columbus, Ohio.
The countdown has begun. This May, 1,000 global leaders will gather in Doha for the Qatar Economic Forum powered by Bloomberg, held in conjunction with our official partners, the Qatar Ministry of Commerce and Industry and Media City Qatar, and premier sponsor QNB. Join heads of state, influential ministers, and leading CEOs to make new connections and gain unique insights. Learn more at QatarEconomicForum.com.
Joining us now is Jens Nordvik, founder and CEO of Exante Data. Jens, let's start here. President Lagarde, Chairman Powell, Governor Bailey, what's your number one question going into that a little bit later this morning?
I would say, what matters more, growth or inflation, right? We're in a totally different cycle than we've seen for the last 40 years, right? That even if we have recession fears, the central banks are in a very, very tricky spot, right? Because inflation is way above target and they can't really focus on growth as much as they've done in the past. And I think if you look at what's going on in the market, right, we've clearly had the recession focus over the last couple of weeks, right? And nevertheless, bond yields are close to the highs, right? It used to be the case, the lesson for the last 40 years was as soon as there was any weakening in growth, you just had to close your eyes and buy bonds. And this cycle is totally different, right? Because it is an inflation cycle as opposed to just a growth cycle.
I look, Jens, at the path of inflation, and this would be my question today to these bankers, and it's a really esteemed panel to say the least, folks, really pay attention to that. Jens, to me, inflation is bipart in that there's an easy path down, core comes down, and then it gets way, way more difficult. Where do you perceive the level of inflation where it really becomes heavy lifting for these central bankers?
Yes, so I think we probably have a period where goods prices and commodity prices are going to come down over the next year. And that really has not much to do with central bank policy, right? And then the question is, if the wages and the services prices stay elevated so that a drop in those other prices don't really get the overall inflation numbers down that much, then the central banks are going to do the heavy lifting and really get tight. Don't forget, we're talking about the Fed having overdone it. How many months have they actually been hiking? A couple of months. We're a couple of months in here, right? And that's the discussion already, right? So the real tricky bit would be if they have to go to 3 and then considering going to 5. Well, that's when then the pain on the economy will be severe, right? Right now, we're really discussing about getting to neutral-ish, a little bit above, but not really tight. It's not a Volcker cycle yet, right? But that would come into play if the wages keep going, if the services prices keep going, even beyond the point where this supply issues has been fixed.
Yeah, just real quickly here, to your point, Loretta Mester this morning in Sintra said the Fed is just at the beginning of raising rates and sees rates going to 3.5% by the end of this year and a little above 4% next year. Has the market adequately priced that in?
No. So we at the moment, especially last week, we got to an extreme point where the market was actually pricing significant cuts in 2023, right? So essentially priced that we're going to have a 9-month tightening cycle, and then we're going to start cutting, right? So obviously the hikes are priced bigger than is normal for a cycle, right? Because we're talking about 50 and 75 basis point steps. But nevertheless, we were pricing a hiking cycle that was going to be essentially a year, and then the cuts were going to start. That, I think, is what's very questionable. I think we're going to have a situation where the services prices are going to be sticky, and it's going to be very, very hard for the Fed to switch to cutting mode. It might be the case that we're not going to be talking about 75 basis points forever. Maybe we're going to go to a more slow pace of tightening. Maybe we're going to plateau at a high level of rates. But this notion that the Fed is going to flip from super hawkish to getting ready to cut within a year, that I think is too early. And I think we're going to push that out, and that's not priced yet.
Jens, awesome to get your view on things, as always. A bit of a reality check from UN Exante Data. Jens Nordvik there.
Greg Villiers with us on the elections, on what we learned in the, I guess this was, no, it's not the first Tuesday of June. We're late in June. But anyways, we had an election with some real results. Greg, I want to go to what the Democrats need to do to not focus inside the Beltway and have a Democratic Party strategy across this nation. Kate Zierinke in the New York Times destroyed the Democrats this weekend, saying they've simply failed to go across the nation in organization.
Yeah, you would think they'd be doing a lot better, Tom, on so many issues. I think that there is a need for something more unified. Maybe the abortion issue will finally get the party together. It's given them a catalyst. But you and she and her piece are right. There's a lack of unity and strategy.
A single sentence in your note this morning on the governor of California. What does good Mr. Newsom need to do?
Well, I think he's running. He's starting to run some ads. I think he's making noise like he may run. You know, everybody's frozen in place right now because of Joe Biden. If Biden announces he's going to seek a second term, which I doubt, but if he does, that changes everything. If he doesn't, I think Newsom runs, and believe it or not, don't shoot the messenger here, I think Hillary Clinton may give thought to one last run.
Wait, what? Say that one more time, Greg?
Yes.
Sorry, right, I can't let that go.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I do. There's been a lot of speculation in the last few days that if Biden doesn't run and the Democrats don't have any clear favorite, that she might hop into the race. She's 74. That makes her, you know, fairly young by today's standards. But I don't rule out one last run by her if Biden doesn't run.
Well, there's a lot to go on that particular line of questioning, Greg, but I do want to go back to the task at hand for all legislators right now, which is trying to deal with inflation, which is the primary concern for a lot of investors, the social issues creeping up in terms of priorities for some voters. But is there any chance that this Congress could really take action in a material way from a legislative stance in terms of financing different kinds of programs or offsetting some of the inflationary pressures, given the lack of unity and given the polarization that you were just talking about?
Logically, you would think the answer would be yes, they will. But logic does not dominate Washington. And I think that while there's a lot of talk about tariffs, a lot of talk about other programs that might help a little at the margin on inflation, I don't see it. I think Ukraine is more important. And as long as this war continues, we're going to have high energy prices, high food prices. I think that's the bigger factor.
So, Greg, if that does spur some sort of recession, where is the fiscal impulse to respond?
Typically, doing the exact wrong thing at the exact wrong time, you're going to see Congress now get very frugal. Not a lot of spending. Republicans will take the House. They don't want to spend a lot of money. So just when you have monetary policy tightening, right, you're going to see fiscal policy tightening as well.
Greg, frame it for me. A Sunday evening, the end of March, 1968, Lyndon Baines Johnson, overwhelmed by Vietnam, among others, said, "I'm not going to run again." I was sitting on the couch. I remember it clear as a bell, a nation stunned. What is Biden waiting for, or does he have to wait for March of 2024?
Well, the march that you refer to with LBJ occurs on November 8th here in the U.S. That's the election. And if the House flips, which I still think is likely, Senate is a tougher call now because of abortion. But, you know, that could slip as well. I think that would be the catalyst to push Biden out.
Okay.
It's not just his age. It's his polling numbers and the elections on November 8th.
Greg, we've got to talk about the other ticket just briefly. That testimony yesterday. I want your view on this. Does that change the support that the former president gets? And does that open the door a little bit wider for the governor from Florida?
John, June of the year 2022 will be remembered as the month that pretty much finished off Donald Trump. It's not just that he may get indicted. It's not just that he has lost some altitude in the party. It's the mere fact that more and more of his own supporters are telling poll takers that one term's enough. We really are not excited about him running again. And that's his own supporters who are now starting to say that.
That's the one to watch for sure. Greg, thank you. Greg Vanier of AGF Investments.
This is the Bloomberg Surveillance Podcast. Thanks for listening. Join us live weekdays from 7 to 10 a.m. Eastern on Bloomberg Radio and on Bloomberg Television each day from 6 to 9 a.m. for insight from the best in economics, finance, investment, and international relations. And subscribe to the Surveillance Podcast on Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, Bloomberg.com, and of course, on the Terminal. I'm Tom Keene, and this is Bloomberg.
The countdown has begun. This May, 1,000 global leaders will gather in Doha for the Qatar Economic Forum powered by Bloomberg, held in conjunction with our official partners, the Qatar Ministry of Commerce and Industry and Media City Qatar, and premier sponsor QNB. Join heads of state, influential ministers, and leading CEOs to make new connections and gain unique insights. Learn more at QatarEconomicForum.com.